All righty. Good morning or afternoon, everybody, depending on where you're tuning in from. I'm personally in Florida, so I'm over on the East Coast. And thank you for joining us for our webinar today. A quick disclaimer before we get started. So the InTrust Group does not provide any investment advice. We don't endorse any products. All information in our webinar is for educational purposes only. Parties are always encouraged to consult attorneys, accountants, financial advisors before entering into any type of investment. So for today's agenda, we have our co-host, Matt Blackwell, who will be going over understanding storage and operation investments, identifying the risks, reviewing current market conditions, researching and learning how to invest in and outside of an IRA, and then stay tuned for the end because we will have a Q&A. A little bit about me. My name is Rachel Stolrow. I've been with the InTrust Group for over 7 years, and I'm very passionate about educating both clients and companies on how to use a retirement plan to invest in alternative or private investments. A little bit about the InTrust Group. We are self-directed IRA administrators. We have very knowledgeable staff, many who hold the CISP certification, which is the Certified IRA Service Professional certification. We host monthly educational webinars, very much like this one that we are doing today. And we have $5 billion in assets under administration. So we've been doing this for quite some time. We've empowered over 45,000 individual investors on using their retirement plan to invest in investments they know, like, and trust. We've been in business for over 40 years, so arguably one of the very first custodians. And we have a single point of business contact model, meaning when you work here with the InTrust Group, we provide each client and company with a dedicated team of two to answer any questions that come up so that you have personalized service here. All righty, so let's take a poll. What is your biggest hurdle? Sorry, my screen got covered here. What is your biggest hurdle with self-storage investing? We want to know where you're at. Is it finding investments? Investments having poor liquidity? Learning on how to invest properly through a self-directed retirement plan? Investment minimums may be too high? Market conditions? Or verifying the legitimacy of investments with proper due diligence? So again, the question was, what is your biggest hurdle with self-storage investing? We'll give you about a minute.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Gonna go ahead and end this now and gonna go ahead and share the results here.
All righty. So I don't know if you all can see the results, but it looks like quite a huge percentage of you have a hard time finding investments with proper market research and learning how to invest through a self-directed IRA. Another really close one was verifying the legitimacy of investments through proper due diligence, all which I would say is very common questions or issues that a lot of clients and individuals have when entering into, really any type of alternative investment. All righty, so without further ado, Matt, I will give you the floor. Thank you again for being on here with us today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here. Hello, everyone. As Rachel mentioned, I'm Matt Blackwell. I'm the Director of Investor Relations at Reliant Real Estate Management. And to start off, I'll give you a quick background on who we are, just so you can kind of see where we play in the industry, and then we'll kind of review what's going on in self-storage. So Reliant, we are a vertically integrated self-storage owner and operator. We are based out of Roswell, Georgia. The two principals of Reliant bought their first property together in 2007. created Reliant in 2010. If you fast forward to today, we have over 100 properties in our portfolio. That's about a little over 8 million net rentable square feet, over 60,000 units. If you put a value on that, somewhere around 1.6, 1.8 billion, depending on the cap rate. We are the 16th largest operator in the country. We've taken another 67 assets full cycle with investors. Our average hold period is just 3.93 years. So why self-storage? Why should you invest in self-storage? It's a kind of a hot asset class right now. A lot of people are hearing about it, just learning about it and getting excited. But here are the reasons. The main one is it's recession resistant or resilient. I'm never going to tell anybody it's recession proof. In fact, as we'll talk about in a few minutes here, that's kind of in a softer market right now in self-storage. But historically, in downturns, it's outperformed all the other major asset classes in commercial real estate. And we'll kind of hit on that in a little bit and the reasons why. Another good reason for self-storage is there's limited capital expenditure. If you look at some other asset classes, multifamily, hotels, every 10 years, you kind of got to up, you got to spend money to update everything or it's going to be outdated. Self-storage, it's a metal box on a concrete pad, maybe a fresh coat of paint, and that's about all you have to do on the capital expenditures. It also has low operating expenses. There's not a lot of overhead with self-storage. Once again, it's just a metal box on a concrete pad. The dynamic pricing and the short-term leases, leases in self-storage are 30 days generally. And what that allows us to do as an operator and any operator out there is you can adjust the pricing with 30 days notice so that you can keep up with the current market conditions, or you can drop rates to get occupancy and then do price rate increases as they go, because it's very sticky. Once they're in there, they're not very likely to leave for a small rate increase. Whereas, you know, with multifamily retail, you're signing long-term leases and it's harder to build in those rate increases. And the other thing I'd say is diversification. I am far from a investment advisor, but I believe heavily in diversification with your assets that are in the market, the stock market. They should be diversified. You should be diversified into real estate, I personally believe. And then within real estate, you should have diversification. And self-storage is another great asset class, in my opinion. Obviously, I'm a little biased, that you should get into, so you're not tied with all your eggs in one basket. So what creates demand in self-storage? We'll get into that in a minute, but there's kind of three types of tenants that we see. And this is probably a generalization. There's others, but it's lifestyle. People just have too much junk. And I'll be honest with you, a lot of it is people's junk. We make money on people who have too much stuff. The other is commercial. We do have a lot of commercial tenants. We've got a property right around the corner from our office here in Roswell, Georgia. And there's a lot of restaurants in the area, and they keep their catering equipment at our facility. Attorneys keep their paperwork there because they have to hang on to it. So there's a lot of those type of customers as well. And then the other is transition when people are moving. And they tend to be a little bit shorter term. They're in there for 2, 3 months, then they're in their new house and they get their stuff and someone else is in and replaces them. So self-storage, the demand is kind of created by an economy or a population in transition. That's when people are utilizing storage other than just the lifestyle and the businesses. So population growth creates demand, home sales, increase in regional migration. We own a lot of properties in the Southeast. There's been a strong population migration to the Southeast. It's done well for us. A good local economy also helps. The four bullets on the right side of the screen here, we call them the four Ds of self-storage. And this is why self-storage does well in downturns. And it's downsizing, dislocation, divorce, and death. It's kind of morbid. I always hate talking about that one. But when there's a downturn in the economy, unfortunately, a lot of these things are happening. And that creates transition in your life, which is that demand driver for storage. You lose your house, you're moving into an apartment, you're putting your stuff in storage and hoping for a better time. Somebody passes away, they put their stuff in storage. Their kids hang on to it, trying to figure out what to do with it. So on the overall market of self-storage, it's very fragmented. I mentioned earlier with 100 properties, we're the 16th largest operator in the country. There's five public companies that all have well over 1,000 properties. And then you go down 11 spots, and that's us with 100. So it's very fragmented. If those public companies make up about 22% of the market, regional operators, private equity groups like us are about 13%. And then the smaller operators, kind of mom and pop types, are about 64% of the market. And that's in terms of number of facilities. If you look at square footage, because smaller operators tend to be smaller facilities, they're about 40% of the market, but still very fragmented. And Reliant, personally, what we do is a consolidation play. We're buying those smaller operators, doing value add, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and selling to the bigger buyers. But it's a very fragmented industry and a lot of opportunity because of that. So the current market in self-storage, I referenced earlier that it's kind of a softer market right now. And to kind of back up a step, during the pandemic, self-storage had been growing quite a bit. During the pandemic, it took off. It was the best 2 years in the industry. It created a lot of demand for storage because there was a lot of transition going on during the pandemic. That was an anomaly. We knew that. We expected it to come back to normal, but now it's slowed down a little bit more even. And the main reason, if you look at that chart on the left, is home sales. I mentioned transition, but home sales are down. In August, it was 3.86 million homes were sold. That sounds like a lot to me personally. But if you look at that chart, that's the least amount in the last 10 years, even less than during the height of the pandemic when we were all locked in our houses. Less people bought houses last month. So it's just kind of crazy. And so that has impacted storage. And as a result, operators like us have had to drop their rates to try and get occupancy. Now we're using that dynamic rate pricing to try and get them back up to what the market rates are normally at. And continue the revenue flow, but that has created a softer market in self-storage. And the other piece with the home sales, the reason it's so low is if you look at the other chart on the right, interest rates. You look through 2020 through 2022, it's just flat. And those were ridiculously low historical interest rates. It was great for real estate. It was great for home sales. I'm locked into a great rate. I'm never moving. But look at how high they went into 2024. Now we've got our first rate decrease. We'll see what happens with that. I'm not betting one way or the other. But eventually people are going to have to start moving again and buying houses. But the value of homes staying high and those interest rates being high have kept people from buying homes, and that's impacted self-storage. The other issue going on in the market right now is new supply. As I mentioned, the pandemic was a boom for self-storage. And what happened is every random developer in America said, "Hey, self-storage is a really good asset class. I'm going to go build some." And that takes time because you have to permit it, you have to fund it, you have to get the debt, you have to build it. So a lot of that was coming online last year and this year. So when there's new supply in a market, now the existing operator has to drop their rates to compete with the new supply that has really low rates to try and get that occupancy. So that's had an impact on storage as well. What's interesting is 60% of that new development was developers who were new to self-storage. It's essentially, they just saw that self-storage was doing really well. They've got the equipment, they know how to build things, and they went out and did it. Now, we'll talk a little bit later. I think that creates a good opportunity for people right now who are on the buy side because they're running into some hardships because they're not self-storage operators. There is additional supply scheduled to come into the market in 2025, but a significant amount of that is on hold. Because they're looking at the current market, and there were a lot of delays coming out of the pandemic. Permitting was hard. Municipalities were backed up on the permitting side. Construction costs were high and were delayed from all the supply chain issues. So some of those projects that got backed up and they're on the schedule or on the list there that we're tracking for new development, some of those aren't going to happen because now they're looking at the market and it's very different. Although there is new supply scheduled for 2025, a lot of that's probably not going to come online. So what's projected in self-storage in the market going forward? As I mentioned, the new development coming online has slowed, and some of those are delayed, but also people starting new developments has slowed to almost zero. There's still people doing it, but it's very slow because they look at the market now and the costs, and it doesn't make sense for them. Construction costs are high. Lenders are very hesitant to lend on new development. Interest rates are still pretty high, and then the lower street rates that I mentioned. So the projection of the industry is that 2026 through 2029, new supply is going to be very muted across the US. So that plays out well. Theoretically, there's other things that can happen in the market, but that plays out well for the existing operators. If demand stays the same or increases, supply is muted. That should increase street rates and values in self-storage. And that transition that I talked about, that demand is expected to increase slowly through 2025. Hopefully we get some more rate decreases on the interest rate, and people are eventually going to have to start moving. And then it's expected to really pick up in 2026, which is when supply is hopefully muted and that'll bode well for the existing facilities. So with all of that, I'm kind of telling you these are things that are going on in self-storage right now. It's not doing that well, or not it's not doing that well, but it's a slower market, a softer market in storage. What do you do with that? Well, I kind of agree with Warren Buffett. Be fearful when others are greedy and be greedy when others are fearful. This is the time to buy. Transaction volume is down. There's not a lot of buyers out there. The properties that we're buying, we're seeing less competition. Values are down, so we're getting better deals. This was going on last year, but the sellers still had the expectations from the prices they saw during the pandemic. And so they were pricing properties here, and folks like us were willing to buy here. That gap this year is starting to decrease quite a bit. In fact, we just got two properties under contract at about a 20 to 25% discount from the original price. And I believe it was one of those developers who they just now got it built and they have to refinance, and street rates are a little bit lower, debt's higher than what they expected when they started this. And so we got a good deal on it. New development starts are down and future supply is going to be muted. Now's the time, in my opinion, to start buying. There's a lot of people that got into commercial real estate in general, not just self-storage, kind of at the height of the market. And that's when everybody was being greedy. That was probably the time to be fearful. Some of those are getting burned right now. But this is, everything is cyclical, and now's the time to buy and get the better pricing on your facilities. So transitioning a little bit in real estate, and you guys may know this, but I talk to a lot of investors, and they want very low risk and very high reward, or a big return. So there's different types of investments, and this applies to any asset class, not just self-storage, and they all have a different risk return profile. If you take opportunistic, for example, that is a good example is a ground up development deal. You're buying the raw land, you're building the facility, and then you're hoping to lease it up and sell it. It's a lot of risk. There's a lot of things that can go wrong, as we just discussed in that time period. So the return is higher, though. And it should be because you took a lot of risk. It's not guaranteed, but you should have a higher return if you manage to pull it off. Also, with the opportunistic, there's not a lot of cash flow during the hold period. If you look at the other end of the risk return spectrum, there is what they call is what's called a core asset. That's a stabilized property. It's fully leased up, good tenants, perfect location, and it's just generating cash flow because your values in commercial real estate are based on your net operating income, which is just revenue minus expenses. So there's not much you can do to increase the value of a core asset unless it appreciates naturally somewhat because it's already been maximized, but it's low risk and it's good cash flow. On the then there's core plus. That means it's pretty leased. It's maybe 80% leased up. You've got some room to add some value to it. Maybe you can do a few improvements and maximize the upside or the profit a little bit more, but still mostly a cash flow play with a little upside at the end. Value add, and that one's circled because I stole this slide from our investment summary. That's the realm that we're usually playing in, because we think it's the best risk reward or risk adjusted return. Value add is you're taking an existing property and you're doing something to it to increase the value of the property. So you're increasing the revenue. Now the property is worth more. Us personally in Reliant Real Estate, as I mentioned, we're buying from those smaller operators, secondary, tertiary markets. We're generally doing some sort of expansion, more units, more leases, more money. We have some ancillary income. And then we also, we're vertically, as I mentioned, we're vertically integrated. So we manage all of our own properties and try and make it more efficient. So value add, moderate cash flow, moderate risk, and it's still a big return at the end. Not as much as opportunistic, but more than core, core plus. So when you're evaluating a self-storage property, it's different than other asset classes because it's a convenience. It's got to be close to your house, close to work, on the way to work, near the grocery store, something like that. You're not going out of your way to go to find self-storage. School districts don't matter or anything like that. So it's got to be it's convenience. So the first thing to do is identify your addressable market. The standard in the industry is to look at the 1, 3, and 5 mile radius around a property. And then you're looking at your data sets within that to determine if it's a good market or not. So it's very much a sharpshooter's game. You can't say we're near Atlanta. You can't say Atlanta is a good or bad market. This radius in Atlanta might be good. This radius down the road might be bad. It just depends on that micro market. And we've actually transitioned over the last couple of years, and we've gone away from the radius of 1, 3, and 5 miles. And we do drive times now because that's essentially what that was trying to do. So if you look at the picture here, that gives you an example of when you run the, we did a 5, 10, 15 minute drive time on this one. And this actually isn't one of our properties. It's our office location. And depending on where we're looking in a rural area, we might even go out a little bit more than 15. In an urban area, we might go more because there's, if there are more properties, more competition, we might do more of a 5, 7, and 10 type radius. So you just got to kind of know your market and have some experience with that. And then once you have that radius identified, then there's no one data point that you can look at and say, hey, there's demand in this market. We should build, buy, whatever you want to do. But I'd say the biggest one to look at is your competition in that market. And it's not necessarily bad if there's a lot of properties. What's important is what's their occupancy. If they're all 95% occupied, it's probably a good market as long as there's room for more demand based on the total analysis. If it's 50% occupied, it's probably not a good market to add more storage into. It's not going to do well for you. So the biggest thing is look at your competition, their occupancy, the unit mix. Do they have a wait list for climate controlled? Do they have boat and RV parking? Is there a demand for that? Is there a wait list for it? And then you want to look at the condition and management of those other facilities as well and see if you can outclass them by being a little bit more professional. The other thing, you always want to look for growth. That's part of that transition demand. So new apartments, new neighborhoods going in. Is there a factory being built in that area that's going to bring in new jobs or businesses staying in that area? So you got to evaluate that market and look at how it's growing. And with the location, a big piece is the traffic count because a lot of people, they may Google and find your facility that way. And everybody does ads online to try and get traffic. But a lot of times it's just people driving by. So what's the traffic count? Is your sign visible from the road? Is your facility visible from the road? So people notice it on the way from their house to their grocery store and they're like, hey, that's right by my house. I need storage. I could probably go right there because it's easy. So once you develop that full picture of the property, and there's other data points we use as well, and there's a lot of software. Another thing I didn't put on here is do a lot of research on new development because as I mentioned earlier, that's the biggest risk. New development across the entire US, yeah, it kind of impacts the industry overall, but it really matters in your micro market. So there's some data, there's some software you can use that tells you whether or not there's new development. You also need to call the municipalities, see what's lined up. And then you also need to drive there, go visit your facility and look around. I was talking to somebody last week who's a self-storage operator. They did those first two things. They looked on their software, they talked to the municipality. And then they went to the site and there's construction across the street and they went over and talked to the guys and it was a new self-storage facility. So you've got to make sure you do your due diligence and make sure your micro market has room for demand. And now that's also based on if you're doing development or value add, because our value add usually has expansion. If you're looking for a core property that's just cash flowing, as long as it's well leased up and there's not new supply coming in, the others don't matter quite as much.
Thank you, Matt. Just a quick question as we kind of round out the due diligence market research bit. For folks trying to verify legitimacy of some existing investments, if they want to get involved, are there any specific questions they would ask or information to seek or even red flags to beware, just in addition to what you've mentioned here?
Yeah, great question. I probably should have made a slide on this. I'll start with red flags. When somebody's promising you the moon, it's probably too good to be true. All sponsors like us have to make projections. And those projections are, we base them on our data, but there's a lot of things in there you can change to make it look really good or really bad. You can adjust the cap rate or the exit cap rate and make it look really good. But if it's not realistic, that's no good for your investors. So, I think a question I ask a lot is, what's your exit cap rate and why? Make them explain to you why they built that in there. And if you're not familiar with cap rates, happy to talk about that later. It's a little bit more complicated, but the lower they are, the more people are paying for properties, the higher cap rates are, the less they're paying. And you have to guess what cap rates are going to be when you sell, when you put in your underwriting. So I would lean to somebody who's conservative with that. I'd ask them, what are current cap rates now? And what are you underwriting as an exit cap rate? My biggest thing I say with any real estate is evaluate the team. And it's hard to do. I get it. If you're close, you can go visit them and try and get to know them. But you're really, it matters that self-storage, it matters that it's multifamily, what market it's in. But what's really important is the team you're investing with. Everybody's probably got a good track record right now. Those low interest rates that we had for so long, it was hard to lose money in real estate. Now you're seeing the good operators separate from the people who just got lucky on timing. And so I think getting to know that team and building that trust with them is really important. Can they navigate a down market and still do well and not lose your principal? Trying to think what else I'd recommend here. I always ask people, hey, what was the worst deal you've ever done? We actually have an article on our website about ours. And that'll tell you a lot right there, because everybody's got a mistake somewhere, or they're going to have one coming up. And the follow-up question to that is, what did you learn from it and what did you change? Was there anything else in your question I missed, Andrew?
No, Matt, thank you so much. That was wonderful. I just wanted to touch on, the 25% of folks that said, hey, really trying to verify legitimacy of deals here. And that was great. Appreciate you. And if anyone has any questions about that as a follow-up, please enter in the Q&A and we'll address it to the best of our ability in the Q&A. On to the next bit. Thank you, everyone.
Alrighty, so what is an IRA? How does it work? Let's get into it. So what is a self-directed IRA? A self-directed IRA at its core is a retirement plan. However, it does allow the individual account holder to make their own investment decisions. There's a greater opportunity for asset diversification. So where clients may be used to having an IRA or a 401k with their employer, and they can invest in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, right? The public market, you can actually invest in a lot more than what's in the public market. And so what clients don't realize is a lot of these larger banks and brokerage firms limit clients into what they can invest in when, again, there's so much more asset diversification out there. So what companies like the Interest Group does, or a self-directed service provider does, is we specialize in custodying alternative investments. And typically those are public or private investments. All investments in a self-directed retirement plan need to be with a regulated trustee or custodian. So a lot of clients will ask me, hey, why do I need you, right? Can I just take out the money myself and self-direct these retirement funds? And unfortunately, the answer is no. You do need a regulated trustee or custodian to administer this transaction. So tax deferred versus preferred. So really, tax deferred, what that is tax deferred funding is funding your retirement plan with traditional funds. They have not been taxed yet. The tax will come when you decide to take a distribution or withdraw your earnings. A Roth retirement plan has tax-free earnings. So those are really two of the types of contribution types, right? So with a Roth account, you have tax-free earnings, meaning you pay taxes up front. However, all of those investments that you make throughout the lifetime of your retirement plan get to grow tax-free. Free and you get to enjoy those tax-free benefits. Moving on to the next slide, with some caveats, there may be some sort of unrelated taxes when it comes to your investments within a retirement plan, some sort of unrelated business income tax. What is that and how does it work? It's money earned, UBIT is money earned by a tax-exempt entity like your IRA that's not related to its tax-exempt purpose. So if there's a trade or business that is going on, right, or leveraging debt, things that are unrelated, you can have some sort of unrelated business income tax related to your retirement plan. And so when it gets into UBIT, and if this is something that applies to the investment that you're making, we always recommend to please seek advice from a tax advisor. We're not tax advisors. We're here to tell you what the rules and regulations are within a self-directed retirement plan. I don't know, Matt, if you want to touch a little bit on UBIT. I know you're also in the same boat as us, right? But I'll let you kind of chime in there if you want to as well.
Yeah, I am. I'm not allowed to give tax advice either, nor would you want to take it from me. Yes, and investments like ours do generate UBIT. But in full disclosure, I invest in our deals with my self-directed IRA because it's the funds that I have available. So it is a great way to invest, in my opinion, once again. But just make sure you talk to your tax professional and see what the impact is to you.
Thank you. All right, getting started. So, how does it work within a self-directed retirement plan? I always say it's three easy steps, mainly because it's probably something I do on a day-to-day basis. It does take a little bit more work from our clients and account holders. So, step number one is opening a retirement plan here at the Intrust Group. Step number two is funding your retirement plan. The traditional or typical ways are rolling over money from an existing employer plan or transferring over funds from an existing IRA, or you can make a contribution. And step number three is directing us to ultimately make the purchase that you want to purchase with some sort of purchase agreement, promissory note, subscription agreement, you name it. And once we have funds in your account and your purchase agreement, then we're able to go through and fund your chosen alternative investment. All right, so wrapping up here. Things that are next for us. So, our next webinar is October 24th. It is on factoring. And if you have any topics, as usual, please do complete the brief survey here at the end. We are going to be getting into a Q&A in just a moment as a reminder. If you need more information on self-directed IRAs, a great place to start is through our Learning Center. We have so many great free resources, blogs, and webinars just like this one available to you. And then be sure to follow us on our three social media platforms. All right, so I think we are going to get here. Oh, we have one more poll. So now that we have done this webinar, let's gauge your knowledge. Do you feel more confident in self-storage investing, or do you need more help understanding?
This will tell me how well of a job I, or how good of a job I did, and we'll see.
Right.
As it mentions in the prompt, everyone, if you still have questions, please type those into the Q&A and we will address them to the best of our ability in the next section.
Yes, that's right. We'll have our Q&A and then also personal contact information. So any in-depth questions, Matt or I are always happy to assist offline as well.
All right. That's about as much as we're going to get. And it's about 60-40 helpful versus don't need a bit of help. So please get those questions in and we'll do our best. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you,
Okay.
Matt.
Awesome. Thank you. So the first question is, will the PowerPoint slides be available to refer back to? Andrew, I'll let you chime in on that. I do know that the recording will be sent out and it will be live on our website. So they'll be able, to be seen virtually there, but is the deck sent as well?
That is correct. Everyone that registered will receive these slides and the full replay page with timestamps and everything you could want for the replay experience. And reach out to Matt or Rachel or I with any questions you have about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Okay, next question. This one's for you, Matt. Where do you find storage units to purchase?
Good question. So it depends on what level you're trying to buy at. There, as I mentioned, there are a lot of really, really small operators, smaller properties than what we would look at, usually secondary, tertiary, or those are probably more tertiary type markets. A lot of times you can go knock on the door and just see, hey, are you willing to sell? We're traditionally going through the broker network. We get a lot of limited looks because we've been around for a while. They know we're going to close on deals. We're not going to retrade. That's where we find a lot of our best opportunities. But you can definitely, if you're driving by, you can do research online. My little brother, who does not work for us, but is in real estate with a different company and not sell storage, is trying to buy one right now and keeps running ideas by me. But you got to do a lot of research. You can reach out to brokers, but a lot of it is just looking at properties and calling them, look them up online. If you have a certain area, you've done that analysis, call the owners in that area and see if you can find a good opportunity.
Thank you. The next question is it looks like it's an IRA question. What types of charges does Intrust charge for self-directed account? Approximate monthly or yearly cost? Please do reach out to me. My contact information is on the screen. We also have very in-depth fee schedules on our website. So again, reach out, look at our website. We're happy to go into depth, on your particular investment.
And I'm happy, Rachel, to include that in the follow-up, everyone. I'll link our fees just so you have it available to you. That'll be coming tomorrow.
Great. Thank you, Andrew. Next question. If you invest using a Roth IRA, it's my understanding that you receive revenue tax-free. However, are you still able to write off expenses? So on a personal level, and I don't know if you want to touch on this at all, but write-off expenses that you may incur personally, I mean, typically no, right? Any expenses that are incurred are typically paid through your retirement plan. And I don't know specifically how it works, Matt, through self-storage, but a lot of it we see is through real estate investing, right? So if taxes are due or they need to hire somebody for maintenance, construction, you name it, all of those expenses would be paid through the retirement plan if that's the way that it was purchased.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. And it sounds like that's question was specifically towards individually owning. I will say in our type investments, a normal investor not using a self-directed IRA would get depreciation. That shows on your K-1, even if you are a tax advantaged account using a self-directed IRA. But at the end, when you sell, they recapture that and they just offset. So I don't think that you've already got the tax advantage by using the self-directed IRA. I don't think there's anything additional. Once again, not a tax professional, so.
Correct. Not a tax professional and want to learn a little bit more about your question, but essentially, no, there's no writing off any expenses, depreciation if it's held within a retirement plan. What are the contribution limits? So they are different for a 401k versus IRA. We do have solo 401ks, but from an IRA standpoint, it is $7,000 or 8,000 if you are 50 years of age or older.
And Rachel, I know, of course, that different or is a bit different for some of those non-traditional or Roth accounts. So again, I can link the full contribution limits page that we have that really breaks it down simply.
Perfect. Yes, because beyond just traditional and Roth, there are many other plan types that we have that if you are self-employed or have a small business, you could have a much higher contribution limit depending on your plan type. All righty. So next question. It looks like it's another self-directed question. Can my self-directed IRA invest in an LLC, which is buying property? Yes, and it is something that our clients do very often. There are both pros and cons investing directly versus through an LLC. And so, again, always feel free to reach out to us if you want to hear what those are. We have really great resources that we can send you as well. But the short answer is yes. All right, next question. It looks like this one is for you, Matt. What are the expected short and long-term returns?
If you're asking specifically about our investments, please reach out to me. I'm happy to talk about that with you. My contact info is there. And self-storage in general, it really goes back to that risk-reward spectrum chart that we looked at, and depends on what you're what type, if you're buying core plus, value add, or opportunistic. Opportunistic is going to be much higher. Value add will be next down there, a little less risk, a little less reward, all the way down the course. It really depends on your goals. Do you want cash flow? Are you risk averse? Then you want to look at core. It's kind of hard to say. It depends on the individual property or the sponsor that you're working with and their business plan on what those range of returns could be.
All right, next question. It looks like two parts, one for you, one for me, Matt. The first one is, do we offer self-directed 401k plans? Yes, we do. Please, as Matt also said, reach out to me. Happy to answer those questions for you, and we can go through that process. The second portion is, I haven't gone online. Do you offer syndications?
Yes. So I really didn't get that because I'm not supposed to be selling on here, but we do have a fund that we are currently raising equity for. So it's a syndication. It's just in a fund model where you'll have multiple properties to kind of risk mitigate your investment. And once again, reach out. I'm happy to chat with you about that.
Next one, Matt. How and where do I find a storage building investment choice?
And if you can, if I'm not answering this correctly, add on to your question there. But if you're looking for an investment choice, looking at different operators, I mean, Google's gonna be your first resource. Reach out. I share my competitors that I know and trust with other investors that are looking to compare, or looking for maybe a different type on that risk reward spectrum that we don't do. I'll recommend other groups to them that I trust. I always say I haven't done my due diligence on them, but I know them and I like them and they're good people. But there's a few groups out there. I will say storage has much less than, like, if you look at multifamily, everybody and their cousin is out there raising equity for multifamily, from really big companies down to the guy who just decided to get into it and is raising equity on LinkedIn or something. Storage has less people. There are a lot out there by all means. And not to get crazy off, but there's different types of structures for the offerings, and some can advertise and some cannot. So that also makes it harder to find them as well, because they can't advertise, some of the smaller groups.
Alrighty, next question, return. So this is another returns question. I think you already touched on it, right? What are kind of average returns? As Matt said, his contact information is there, his email's there. Always welcome to reach out and set up an individual consultation. Next question, is Reliant looking for investors?
Yes, I'm always looking for investors. We typically start a fund and raise equity for over a year, 2 year and a half, and we close that to new acquisitions, new investors. Now we're executing on the business plan, and we launch another fund a month later. So we're always raising equity and looking for investors. And we have a lot of repeat investors. And so please reach out, and happy to chat.
Awesome. Another return question. It's a hot topic of the day.
Everybody
So,
likes returns. That's why you invest.
right? Exactly. What has been the average return in the last 4 years industry-wide? If you have that information, again, know it's something that you touched on a little bit already.
Yeah, industry-wide, once again, it depends. Like, are you looking at cash flow, or are you looking at profits from a sale? It's really hard to say. I guess a stat I could give you is over the last 26 years, and this is looking at the REIT, the public company level data, it's 18% a year. But that's a very different business model than the private equity and kind of what we're doing. But it outperformed all the other major asset classes.
Awesome. Thank you. A UBIT question. Did you say self-storage is subject to UBIT by itself, or is it mainly subject to UBIT due to the possible debt financing?
It's the debt financing. So, and once again, not a tax professional, but my understanding, what I say to all my leads, investors that I talk to, is my understanding is that they are taxing you on the portion of your return that is attributed to the leverage, that debt. Right now, we're averaging about 55% loan to value. How they calculate it, that scale, I don't know. It is different than long-term capital gains tax. So be sure to talk to your tax professional about it.
Thank you. Yes, as always, like Matt said, we are not tax professionals, but we're always happy to answer
And
questions and
real quick, just
always make
to
sure.
clarify there too, Rachel, it's not just self-storage. My understanding again is it's any real estate that's going to have debt on it is going to be
That's
subject
right.
to that as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's not specific to self-storage, but it could be, any type of investment that's leveraging. Okay, what is the average return of investment over the last 5 years? So, average return.
I once again reach out. I'll go with my previous answer. It really depends on the type of investment, who you're with, and whether you're talking about cash flow or the total return at the end. I will say it's been very good in storage. Am I allowed to tell some of our returns, Rachel? I don't know if I'm allowed on here, but they've
Yes,
been very
yeah.
good. How about that? I'll just throw that out there.
Perfect. And then I'm sure you have some sort of document, right, that you can send. So if somebody reaches out, you probably have that ready and available for them.
I do.
Okay, next question. What's the average cost to buy a storage unit?
Good question. Varies quite a bit. Really just depends on the size. You can find one for $1 million somewhere, and you can buy one for 20 million and probably up from that as well, just depending on the market, the size. The value of that property is really based on that net operating income. So you're looking at the revenue minus expenses, and then you're looking at what cap rates are in the market, and then you can calculate the value of a property. But it ranges quite a bit, just depending on the size you're looking at and the location.
Alrighty. The next one for you is, where are your self storages located right now?
Oh, that one I can talk about. Good. Yeah, so we are primarily in the Southeast, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Arkansas. We do have a small portfolio in Colorado. We bought our first property in Indiana last year, and we have two in Virginia under contract.
Wow. Very busy.
Yes, very busy. And the reason we do that is with managing our own properties, there's some efficiencies of scale being in that same southeastern market. There's a lot of population migration to the southeast. It's been a great market. I wish I could say we picked it because of that. We just happen to be here, and it's been a great market. But we're slowly expanding that as well and moving out a little bit further.
Awesome. Next question. How liquid is this investment?
So it is illiquid. Your money is tied up until we sell everything. So essentially until we say so. As I mentioned earlier, our average hold period is under 4 years. Once again, just my opinion, but that's why I think it's a good opportunity for self-directed IRAs, is because that's money you could be putting it somewhere else in the market, but you're not going and buying a house with or anything like that for yourself to live in. So that is money that's out there to be invested in and try not to be touched. So that's why I think it is a good opportunity for self-directed IRAs.
Yes, something that is very, very common in the alternative asset space is the illiquidity of the investments, at least for, like you said, a certain period of time. Next question for you. Is Reliant Real Estate interested in people on its webinar with them? If so, how does that work? What are the typical returns? I think that's a really great direct question, right? If you may want to kind of chat outside and then you can go through that process with them.
Please reach out. And just to warn you, I'm going on vacation tomorrow, but I will reach out as soon as I get back.
Perfect. Okay, the next one. So, the company who shared the information about the self-directed IRA for storage facilities, were they saying we could invest in their company? If so, what is the amount that is required? So, what is your minimum investment amount?
Yeah, our minimum investment is 100,000.
Rachel, can you hear us? Matt, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Andrew.
Okay. If Rachel got disconnected, I will ask the questions.
All right.
All righty.
Here we go. I
Oh,
am
there you
so
go,
sorry.
Rachel.
Yes.
You're good.
Lovely,
All you.
lovely technology and internet problems. So thank you so much for your patience, everybody. Okay, on to the next one. Seller bought self-storage property with purchase price as 10 million in a couple years ago. Now the seller is willing to sell for 7 million. How could we arrive at current market price? What are the steps to follow? Assume that you may not have comps nearby. This may be like an in-depth question. Let me know if you want me to repeat that question, Matt.
I'm not sure I quite caught that there. They're asking how to get back up to market rates.
It sounds like it. We may need a little bit more clarification on that. That's what I'm getting as well. So seller bought self-storage property for 10 million a couple of years ago. Now they're willing to sell for 7. How do we arrive at the current market price? And what are the steps that you would typically follow?
Yeah, so I think the current market price, if they're willing to sell at 7, is it's a softer market now. It's based on your net operating income. So their revenue has gone down at that property, and they're probably looking at what the cap rates are in that market, what buyers like us are willing to purchase at to get to that price. If you're looking at buying that and then growing it afterwards, it's rate increases, better operations, improvements at the facility, better management. I'm not sure if I fully answered your question. Feel free to add to that or reach out. I'm happy to talk about that a little bit more.
Thank you. Next question. When we sign up for a self-directed IRA and then we have a consultation regarding next steps, the minimum is to invest 7K. So if you can elaborate a little bit more, I'm not sure I'm fully understanding the question, but yes, when you have a self-directed IRA, you can absolutely have a consultation for the next steps. As we briefly touched on earlier, the interest group, what makes us really unique is that we provide everybody with single points of contact. So whether you're just getting started with us or you've been with us for 6 or 7 years, you always have a human to reach out to, and we can answer questions at any time. The minimum to invest is 7K, maybe a Matt question, but just know we as a company, self-directed custodian, you are truly self-directing. So we always defer to the company that you are investing in, what their minimum investment amount is.
To clarify a bit, I wonder if they're confusing the contribution limit of 7K annually. Just to clarify, and that might be where the 7K is coming.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that makes sense. So contribution is very different than the investment minimum, right? Contribution is what you contribute on an annual basis over time, and there's a maximum contribution limit. Typically, when clients open up an account with us, they roll over amounts higher than that. Again, I don't know if this is really answering what your questions are, but feel free to add on to that and we can answer a little bit more in depth. Next question. How and where do I find self-storage investment choice? So again, I know it's something that you kind of touched on already, but if you want to add anything to it, feel
I'm
free to.
trying to think what I can add on to that. Once again, just look it up. Talk to, actually, you know what? I'm going to throw out this time. There are a lot of investment groups out there, and I'm not going to recommend any because I don't know who's good and who's not. But they find deal flow, and they can, and then they kind of vet them. They vet the opportunity as a group, and say, okay, hey, we think this is good because there's a lot of different people in the group, a lot of experience. So look and see. Once again, they're hard to find as well, but there are some investment groups out there that do that group due diligence, and people like us bring deals to them because we know they have a lot of investors. And once they've vetted us, it's a good opportunity for everyone involved. You can Google and look, see who's out there. Make sure you talk to them, make sure you ask them good questions, and really dig in, you know, and those ones I mentioned earlier, you know, your underwriting. What are you doing for your exit cap rate? What are cap rates right now to see how aggressive they are? Because in my opinion, you don't want somebody who's aggressive. If you see they're aggressive in those decisions and not, they're probably aggressive in others, and that's risk. You may be comfortable with it, but make sure you ask those good questions. I'm trying to think where else you can find them. There are some crowdfunding platforms that put stuff out there as well. I'm not going to promote any of them. I don't know who's on there and who's not right now, so.
Next question, and you may need to elaborate on this. What is the typical valuation multiple, and is it based on EBI TDA? Not something I'm familiar with, but you may be, Matt.
So it's very similar in commercial real estate. Instead of EBITDA, it's your net operating income, which is that just revenue minus expenses. And you're looking, you can do the trailing 12 months, what is your NOI? And then the other variable in there, and I forget what he called in the question, is a cap rate. So if you look at it, you can have the cap rate and the value of a property, you can kind of determine what their NOI is. Or if you have the NOI and the cap rate, you can determine the value of a property. Self-storage right now, cap, once again, very market dependent, 5.5 to 6.5, probably. Secondary, tertiary markets, probably more 6 to 6.5. We just had an exit 3 months ago with 19 properties, and we were sub 5 on our cap rate. But that's because we kind of get a premium on that portfolio level sale.
Righty, thank you. What is the typical acquisition price per square feet for self-storage in your value add model?
That's a good question. I don't know offhand on that one. I apologize. I actually had it written down 3 weeks ago because somebody else asked me. I had to go ask our acquisitions team. Once again, it varies quite a bit. And sometimes, you know, with our model with value add, we're paying a little bit more per square foot because we're buying on, there's opportunity, there's additional land that we know we're going to build on. So we're willing to pay more because it's not limited there. And we know we can create more value. Once again, it just it varies quite a bit. If you do want to reach out, I can get that data for you. We do have it in our underwriting on each property. And we can look at a couple of properties and talk through it.
Awesome. Next question. How long has your management team been in place? So it looks like the operation team, CEO, COO,
See, now we're
etc.
asking really good. These are the questions you should ask all sponsors.
I
Those are
was
very
just
good
thinking
questions. Yeah,
that.
and one of those, because I talked about the team earlier, is it the same team? You know, and if it grows, that's okay, but are they growing with good people? But if there's people leaving, the two principals they founded the company, they're still both here. Are in the beginning, they bootstrapped it and then they just slowly built out the team. Our director of acquisitions lived on one of the owner's couches for a long time and he was managing a property. It started doing the accounting in the back office and it just worked his way up and learned every asset of the business. So the team has been here for a really long time. I've been here 5 years. We've continued to add on. And one thing I'll say about Reliant, and by all means I'm biased, is I enjoy the people I work with. I've worked some other places where I didn't necessarily. Todd and Lou, the principals, do a very good job of hiring quality people that they can teach the self-storage isn't hard. Some of them have specific skills that you do have to hire for, but they bring in good people and they can teach them self-storage and go be successful. The Trying to think, our CFO has been here. Everybody's been here longer than me. On the operations side of it, Colin Van Dyne's our director of operations. We stole him away from a very large company where he was managing several or 15, 20 stores. And actually, this was the plan as we started to grow was we need an operations team that's built out with a structure so we can grow quickly and be efficient with it. And not stub our toe, and he's done a very good job with that, and continue to grow that team. So I'd have to go back and look at on our investment summary. I think altogether, it's a well over 100 years of experience in self-storage between the team.
Wow, thank you for that. Is there a secondary market for self-storage investing?
Do you mean a secondary market in terms of selling your investment, or just buying a property and turning it around really quickly?
Yes, please elaborate.
If you're talking on the investment side, there, yes and no. So right now we don't have any set up with our funds. There are some groups out there. They have to be broker dealers that have created some secondary platforms where you can take alternative investments like this and list your investment, and then somebody else can buy it from you. I've talked to a couple of those. We haven't done anything with that yet. That's kind of a new emerging aspect or technology. So we'll see how that goes.
And it looks like what was added on to is there a secondary market for self-storage investing, is in selling your investment. So that's what it was in relation to.
So there's some groups out there. It's very emerging. They're very small. So I don't know if you'd get a lot of traction with it. And the sponsors like us do have to partner with them for you to be able to do that. I don't know if there's anybody in self-storage doing it yet. We haven't gone down that road.
Thank you. Next one, if the minimum investment is 100K, how soon can investors expect to see a return?
Very good question. And I'm assuming you're talking specifically about our investment, because once again, that varies by the type of deal you're doing on that risk return spectrum. With us, we'll do our first distribution after the We're raising equity over about a year for our fund, and then we'll operate for a full quarter with all the investors in it and do our first distribution.
Thank you. The next one, what are current cap rates in the industry?
That's right at that 5.5 to 6.5. Once again, varies very much by market.
Next one, my IRA is less than 100K. Can I still invest to Reliant for storage? So again, I'll defer to you on what your minimum investment amount
Yeah,
is.
our listed minimum is 100. I do have some leeway with that. Give me a call. Always happy to chat and see if we can work something out.
Then, of course, there's always partnering options as well. I could send a bit more information again in the follow-up that can explain a bit more on how you can utilize funds from an IRA plus funds from outside in a way that's compliant with the IRS.
Yep,
That
that's
also
right.
went not
So,
said, of course. Don't want to rain on your parade, Matt. Thank you very much for that. I
no,
appreciate you.
that's a new one on
yeah.
me, Andrew. I got to ask you about that afterwards. I need to learn more about that.
Yeah,
Great. Good
absolutely. And
CC you.
thanks for mentioning that, Andrew. So, as Andrew mentioned, if you don't have the minimum investment amount, you can partner. Even though you may be a prohibited person, you can partner with yourself as long as nothing's been done with the investment transaction or someone else, you know, that's maybe not prohibited. So just know there is always partnering available. Reach out to Matt or myself again for more details. Does Reliant, so next, moving on to the next question, does Reliant have any sub debt that self-directed IRA could invest versus equity?
We do not. Good question though. Great opportunity, but we don't have that set up.
How often do you have to sell the items in storage for failure to pay? Can you describe that process a little more?
Yeah, really good question. Everybody always wants to talk about storage wars when they get on the phone with investors and new leads. It's less than you would think, actually. I haven't looked recently, but our collections rate was like 1.2 or something like that. Because it's kind of a lower ticket item. So people tend to, they don't want to lose their stuff, even though they probably should. They're paying more for it than it's worth. Don't tell our tenants that, but it's pretty low. We've actually gone to an online model since I've been here. We're doing that because there's some rules and regulations. So when somebody doesn't pay, we put a lock over their units, so they can't get into it. Now they can come pay the late fees. We take the lock off. They can get in because there's two holes on that, one for their lock and one for us to put an overlock on it. So that's the great thing about storage too. You don't have to worry about evictions or anything like that. You just go into the auction process. At a certain point, it depends on the state. If they haven't paid yet, we cut their lock. We take pictures. We can't go inside the unit, so we always have two people to verify. We take pictures of it and then we put our lock back on there, and then we work with a group that does online storage auctions, and there's also other, you have to advertise that you're going to auction it, and you have to meet all these different requirements before you can actually auction it. So they do all of that for us and have insurance and take the risk on that side in case there are any mistakes, which is a much smoother process. And then you also have to verify how many people, if there's an auction and you don't have enough people to show up for Storage Wars, that you can't legally auction it. So when you do it online, you can verify the number of people that have seen it, clicked on it, viewed it, how many people bid on it. And we tend to get better bids actually when we do it that way online. I don't have any crazy good auction stories. People always want to hear those. I did, when I started, I worked at one of our properties for 3 months to try and learn it from the ground up. And there was a guy who bought a small 5x5 unit because it had, in the picture, all it was a leather jacket on the floor. I think he spent like $20 on it or something. So he goes in and picks up the leather jacket, and there are a whole bunch of iPhones and MacBook under it. That's my best story. You hear things about bags of cash and cars. I haven't run into any of that myself. So.
Hey, that's still a pretty good story. let me see. Next one. Oh, we just answered that one. How do I join and fund through Entrust? I'm an older generation. Hey, it's something that we're really used to. We have clients of all ages, even though we have a really great automated platform. As I mentioned, we have great customer service as well. So reach out to me. My contact information is listed. I am happy to personally walk you through the process.
If I could add on to that, Rachel, on our side, if you're interested in investing with us, we work with all custodians, but we do have a strong relationship with Entrust and actually have some of their documents in our system so that it makes the filling them out. We know what needs to be filled out. We've worked with Entrust on that. So when you sign our subscription documents, you can actually fill out the Entrust documents as well. I am not the expert on that. Dominique on our team manages all of that and has done a great job with it. So we try to make that process as smooth as possible on our end as well.
Awesome. And then the last question, Reliant, have you ever lost money with your investments?
Great
Probably a
question.
popular
Great question.
question.
These are the questions you should ask all sponsors I was talking about earlier. The answer is no. I'm gonna knock on wood back here. But no, we've never lost investor principal. We've never had to make a capital call. I'm gonna knock on wood again. We do have an article, as I mentioned, about our worst deal ever. Look on our website and search it. But we've never lost investor principal or had to make a capital call.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Oh, it looks like the very, very last question. Do we offer a 1031 exchange? There is no capital gains taxes on real estate held within a retirement plan. If you have more in-depth questions or if you want that answered a little bit more in depth, please feel free to reach out. Again, both my contact information and Matt's is here on the screen. You can call us and email us, and we're always happy to go through. Oh, one more question before we hop off. Is this investment for a retiree using retirement funds? We have quite a few clients that are retired and have money within their retirement plan and still continue to invest.
And like Matt said about that kind of risk versus reward. So it depends kind of where you are, what's your appetite for both of those, and just doing your due diligence and a lot of research to make sure you're comfortable with where you're headed. But absolutely, like Rachel said, sorry to butt in there.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, everybody who attended. We had some really great questions. Thank you, Matt, for being on here with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rachel and Andrew. Enjoyed it very much.
Yes, me too. Thank you. Take care of
Have a good
everybody.
one.
Bye.